tired of this bullshit. I'm like honestly tired of.
Oh, we're starting.
Yeah, we're starting. We're just jumping in. I think what I'm most frustrated by is this is the thing I've complimented the team about all year is this exhausting, never too high, never too like we should be at DEFCON 1 and we should be able to see that the team is at DEFCON 1. Now I'm gonna say right now, as we get into this podcast, I'm gonna couch everything that I'm saying later with like how I really feel about everything. But it'd be really nice if the Clippers had any sense of urgency at all, like at
all. I totally agree. During the regular season, you know, I loved it because the regular season is a slog. You've got, you know, 72 to 82 games to play in a regular season. And it's like, yeah, you can't live and die by every single win and loss. So it's like, right. Hey, don't get too excited. We got another one, you know, tomorrow, or we got another one in 2 days in a different city. Don't get too low. Hey, there's always a redemption. Blah, blah, blah. These games matter. I want you to be extremely high and I want you to be extremely low. After the game 2 loss, you know, it was all this like, hey, you still got to win 4 games. And like, I think Anthony Doyle, who covers the Raptors, like put it perfectly. He's like, no, you have to win four games.
Yes.
They have to win two.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it's like, yeah, like I don't buy into this. Like, you know, like even Kawhi's like post game was like, you know, just stay even keel. It's like, no, man, fucking feel the fire on your ass because it's there. You're sitting directly on the flames. Yeah. Like I want, you know, this was the team, like, you know, fucking Marcus Morris was the one that was like, you know, people can talk all their shit come playoff times. We're going to be ready. And it's like, it's here, man. I want to see anger. I want to see panic, honestly. Like, I want to see them look a little like, yeah, we know that we're in a hole right now. Like, this isn't good.
I don't want to see panic. I just want to see aggression. Just be fucking aggressive. They have rolled into the first two games, like the first quarter of both of those games, as though they were just rolling out of bed. The first one I chalked up to just, okay, it's early. They had a week off, whatever, blah, blah, blah. Still bullshit that they didn't come out with the energy that they needed. And also I understand why it is that this particular team that struggled in this situation struggled to come out strong. But Jesus yeah. Christ, game two, you've had all these days to get your body and mind ready and you still just kind of lulled into game two, and to fall in a hole again was just inexcusable. And it's the reason why we can't close these games out. It's the same thing that we talked about in the middle of the season. This team is too old to have like to dig themselves out of a hole and then continue up out of the hole and like finish it off. And it's infuriating that they keep like just not starting games with urgency. It's the fucking playoffs. Yeah. It's the playoffs.
It's almost like we all, you know, after the home opener, there was the running joke, you know, the next game at home was like, all right, this is the home opener. That game didn't happen. And it's like, yeah, that's fun with us on Twitter and stuff like that. I don't need the team feeling that way.
Right.
You guys are not in on this joke.
Right.
It's not funny when you've got the jersey on. Welcome everybody to the Shit Set podcast. You know, it's the playoff season in playoffs. Joseph and I do these episodes every 2 weeks every 2 games, 2 weeks is the off season. Yeah. We do them every 2 games. I'm really hoping that we get to do more than one more of these.
Yeah.
But yeah, we are obviously talking about the Clippers' completely embarrassing efforts in games 1 and 2 against the Dallas Mavericks. They dropped their first game on Saturday against the Mavs, 113-103. Like you said, Joseph, it was an early game. You know, they had the week off while the play-in tournament was happening. They essentially had the week off before to get to where they are now. And so, you know, I was with you after game 1. I was like, okay, older team. You know, they basically haven't played basketball in 2 weeks. They'll kick off some rust. Early tip-off, you know what I mean? Like, younger guys can jump out of the gym at any time. Older guys, they need that routine. They've built these, like, you know, really kind of ritualistic experiences going into the games. Cool, they didn't have that. I get it. And, like, then there was, like, the outlier aspect where it's like, they're not going to do that again. So then we get to game two, and they did it again.
Yeah.
and when I'm talking about better. I'm talking about the Mavericks. And yeah. Like, that's the outlier that I'm talking about is the Mavericks shooting is unreal. And unfortunately, the sample size is now two games in a row of it, which doesn't instill me with the most confidence of it, you know, writing itself. I will say this kind of at the top here. I do have to own something. I think that it was in our series preview where, you know, we might've gotten a question about the, you know, historic 3-point shooting percentage that the Clippers have had and whether we felt it was sustainable in the playoffs. And I was like, yeah, you know, I don't think it's going to be an entire team shooting 40%, but like, I don't see everybody suddenly dropping, you know, below 30%. Holy shit. Was I wrong about that?
Oh my God. It's, so let's break down how we're going to do this. Cause we changed how we did the show this season. So we're going to change how we do the show for this postseason. So I think this first segment, which you are setting up so perfectly, is going to be how the hell did we get here? It won't always hopefully be how the hell did we get here. It'll just be how did we get here? But Brian, is that your number one thing as to why we are where we are?
You're talking about the cold shooting from the Clippers?
Well, just both sides happening at the same time, like both outlier events happening two games in a row at the same time.
I think, man, to call it the number one, I suppose so, although the Clippers shot better in game two, so I can't really call that an outlier. Like, even Marcus Morris, who was kind of, you know, not even kind of, was awful, fouled out in game two. By the time he fouled out, he was shooting 40% from three in the game. Like, right. He ended that game 40% from deep. Like, normally you're okay with that. You know, it took 8 3 attempts to get him there, but, you know, and then PG couldn't make a three. I think he went 1 of 7 in game two. I loved what I saw from PG early on, just on the topic of PG. And I'm sure we'll kind of get into like individual performances. Like, I think that could be it. You know, I know that a lot of us in like the independent Clippers media sphere have all been texting each other nonstop. Like, maybe not necessarily, like, we have a couple group chats, but I know there have been like a lot of individual conversations I've been having, you've been having. And I think one of the subjects that we've all been talking about, and I feel like most of us have come to, the shooting is one thing. It's the defensive strategy from the Clippers that I think really is the underline to everything. And when there are air quotes on defensive strategy because they have not committed to one. And I think that's the biggest issue. And the one they seem to commit to the most, I think, is the worst idea, where it's like, we're going to neutralize Luka. And it's like, no, you don't neutralize superstars. Like, it just doesn't happen. Like, it's like, I think the best old head take on the playoffs is let the stars get theirs. You shut down everyone else. And the Clippers have not done that. Right. You know, I know that you have similar thoughts on that. And we can, again, we can like really start to break it down, but I think it's the lack of like defensive identity in this series that has got the team where they are. Cause I'll give you an outlier in game one. In game two, I think the real difference was that they allowed, it's hard to call it an outlier. Cause I mean, we, you know, the whole thing with the Clippers this season was like, is this shooting sustainable? And we've all been saying like, yeah, it's sustainable because they're getting open looks. You have really, really good looks. The Clippers defense has generated those looks for Dallas. Like, yes, they're going to hit. Yes, Tim Hardaway Jr. is going to hit open threes. Yes, Dorian Finney-Smith is going to hit open threes. It's going to happen. These guys are that good. You cannot give them space to shoot.
Yeah, I agree with that. I'll get back to the defensive thing. But even then, it is an outlier because even within getting open looks, they are shooting an outlier percentage on the looks that they're generating. So right. I think it was Seth Partnow, someone retweeted, and they're like almost 20% higher on their expected effective field goal percentage versus their actual effective field goal percentage in this series so far. it's not just that the defensive breakdowns have given them some open looks and they're hitting them. It's that they are also hitting all of the junk that they're shooting as well. I mean, Tim Hardaway Jr. has firmly cemented himself as the greatest basketball player of all time in games one and game two. I'm contemplating a way to go and like trip him and make him sprain his ankle. Like that's
man,
he's been
so good that I think we have to start calling his dad Tim Hardaway Jr. And he is now just known as Tim Hardaway.
He is now Tim Hardaway. Like there is no more Jr. He is Tim Hardaway. We can even call him senior and call his dad the third. Like that's how big of a jump he's made in these first two games. It's been really frustrating. And I think, so when I haven't rewatched game two yet, I was there. So my feeling about it is skewed to how you feel when you're at a game, right? It's more environmental. You try to catch as much as you can strategy wise. But it's hard. It's harder, you know, to really digest it. You got to go back and rewatch it again. And I really think that my biggest issue with the Clippers is something that I said after rewatching the game in game one that I texted you guys in the group chat is the Clippers need to stay home on everybody else.
Yeah.
And that something I tweeted today is the problem with what they've been doing defensively is they're trying to stop everything at once. So they're not only trying to make it to where the role players can't get anything, they're also trying to make it so where Luka can't get anything. And at a certain point, you kind of just have to pick something and do that well. And I asked in the, you know, I asked Ty Lue through the group chat because I didn't ask Ty Lue directly, like, can they just stay home on everybody else? Like Luka's incredible. Luka's been hitting some insane shots. He's been hitting the shots that I said in the preview that I was terrified he was going to make those all series because that's what he's been doing this season. Can they just stay home on everybody else? Guard Luka one-on-one, make him take tough shots. If he hits them, that's fine, but you're not then allowing everybody else to punish you. If you allow Luka to score 40 points every game, you just have to limit everybody else to 50. Or, you know, 60, you know, they just can't go off for the 80 some odd points that, you know, guys like Dorian Finney-Smith and Tim Hardaway Jr. and Jalen Brunson's a menace. But I just think that they need to pick something and stick to it. Right.
So real quick, just on the Jalen Brunson thing, we are now calling him J. Jalen Brunson.
Brunson, yeah. Mm-hmm. That's good.
Jalen Brunson, because he is giving the Clippers the trouble that JJ Barea has always given them.
Right.
Yeah. And you know, to your point about staying home and like, yeah, like I don't love the looks when they've doubled Luka because of what it generates for everybody else. And I think it might've been either late in the second half of the third quarter or the beginning of the fourth, where they went away from that and they were just kind of staying home on everybody. And Luka was putting his shots up and he started missing. And that average started to come back a little bit, you know, like the regression to the mean started to happen a little bit. And it was like, okay, this makes me feel a little bit better. I'm wondering if, you know, the film staff, the coaching staff, like everybody has watched that and been like, this is what we need to do, but we can get to adjustments, you know, in a little bit. I'm in full agreement with you, Joseph. Like I think trying to neutralize
everything.
A superstar.
Well, that's everything.
Well, yeah, everything. Yeah. Is such a mistake, especially when this has not been a team at all this season that neutralizes everything.
Right. Yeah. You know, I might ask Ty about it, you know, in the next sort of session is like, you know, you simplified the offense to make sure that it wasn't overly complicated. It feels, you know, someone, I think Lucas said they were overcoached in games one and two. They were trying too many things. They never really nailed down one thing to see if it worked. It's just like, if it got beat one time, they're like, okay, let's do something else because clearly that didn't work, instead of sticking to it and kind of living with the results. And I think Luke has also said this on the Lob the Jam that they released last night, but they said, I think that while the team is projecting calm, they're playing scared. They're playing chaotic. They're playing afraid of Luka. And I think that that's something that needs to change, is that he's going to be great. He's going to be great. We've beat him, though, when he's been great, because we took other things away. And I think that that's something that I hope Ty kind of realizes over these next few days, is just like, we're not going to stop him. We can do what we want to kind of slow him down a little bit, make him take tough shots, but we're not going to stop him. Who we can stop, like, is everybody else.
I'm good with the Kawhi on Luka thing. Like, I like that. I don't, like, we don't need Patrick Beverley lingering around and like trying to come in for like the help defense. It's like, dude, you're not Pat. I love Pat. You're not going to stop a 6'8 guy from passing out if you're double team. It's just not going to happen.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Well, all the guards have been bad defensively because Luka is 6'8 and is a guard. So it's been really, really frustrating. And I think that the two things that have really contributed to the Clippers going down 0-2, because they were in both games. Like, these were Murphy's Law games. And you're like, how the hell are they up in the fourth quarter? How the hell are they this, you know, within five in the last 2 minutes? Like, how are they even in these games? And that's something you can kind of hang your hat on, is like, look, we've played two games from hell and they've played the two best games of their life, like literally ever. I think there was some other thing that was tweeted where the Mavs played, in terms of like shooting expectation, the sixth best playoff shooting game ever, like in the history of the NBA, it was the sixth best. And it's just, you can hang your hat on some of that, but at the same time, you've got to figure out a way to counter it when it's happening. And I think that the counter can't be, oh, let's swarm Luka. It's got to be, okay, we're going to live with this one thing.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's really shitty that all of the role players have shit the bed in the first two games as well.
Not all
of their role players are killing it.
Not all. Ty brought in one role player who I thought looked really good. And of course, it's the guy counted out in the beginning of the season.
Oturu?
I thought Terrence.
Oh, no, I didn't. No, sorry.
I never counted Oturu out. Terrence Mann, I thought, looked really good in his minutes in game 2.
Yeah, I gotta look at it again. But he definitely changed the energy. But offensively, things get cramped when he's out there. I think he attacked the basket well, but I still think that I kind of felt that when he was out there, the offense, it wasn't as poppy. But that also could have just been the Clippers playing like shit, as they did.
Yeah.
So let's kind of shift into the next segment, which is, how the hell do they get out of this? We've kind of touched on this a little bit. But what's the thing that you would like to see in the first, you know, in the first game in Dallas that might make you feel like the Clippers can turn this around?
Hear me out. I'll give you a one word answer on this.
If you say Oturu, I'm going to kill you.
Canoes.
Canoes. God damn it.
Let them paddle this fucking washed up fraud team out of here and take us to the promised land. The Canoes would never, never drop two at home ever. Mostly because they wouldn't be given the opportunity. You know, like, how do the Clippers get out of this? It's really funny because, like, in some ways it's very complicated. In some ways it's extremely simple.
Yeah.
I think your point of staying home on all the other shooters is a huge adjustment. I think that's a big part of it. You know, like, I'll really start to get into it because it is going to come down to adjustments. Like, I think the thing that was most disappointing about the first two games was the coaching blunders, because that was what we had really hoped to see change with this team. This season was like, okay, you know, Ty's a guy who's going to tinker in the regular season. He's going to have the team dialed in for the playoffs. And in the playoffs, he's going to have a solid game plan. And he really didn't. And, you know, I understand that in game 2, he was the only guy for a minute that was hitting anything that looked like a jump shot. But Reggie Jackson played way, way too many minutes in game 2. And I think Batum, who also at the end of the game, he hit the last three for the Clippers, hit the last shot for the Clippers, is able to hit the shots on the looks that Reggie Jackson was getting, without pounding the shit out of the ball and trying to find his own shot, which I saw Reggie doing way too often. I'm not saying you bench Reggie altogether, but I think a huge adjustment in game two is Reggie only plays the 7 to 8 minutes that Luka is off the floor. And I think that has to happen. You know, I'm okay with, you know, as much as it might, you know, jumble some of the offense, I'm okay with Terrence Mann being on the floor when Luka's out there, you know, like I just because of the athleticism and the energy and his length. But I would rather see Batum play 30 minutes than Reggie Jackson. Oh, I just think defensively what he brings, his ability to hit timely shots, you know, there's so much that he does. Like one of the things that you and I talked about so much in the beginning of the regular season when the Batum like revelation was like really starting to happen was it wasn't always his, you know, perimeter defense. It wasn't always him hitting these like corner threes. You know, he led the league for a large section of the season in corner threes percentage wise. But it was like making the extra pass. He was so good about those touch passes. I remember us talking about that so much where he would make these like really beautiful touch passes to wide open shooters. And I saw Reggie pound the ball too much, dribble into defenders, back out, trying to find his shot. Whereas like, I think in those situations, Batum really helps get the ball moving. And that's what's going to generate good looks for these guys. And they have gotten decent looks in these first two games. I think adding another person who's looking out for that will create more wide open looks. And I think the Clippers will start hitting them at some point. But it's not going to happen with one guy trying to go ISO against somebody who's 6 inches taller than them.
Yeah, I agree with that. The rotations have been confusing and kind of reactionary and weird. And like it feels like from a bird's eye view, literally in game two, because that's where I was sitting, was the top of Staples. But I think from just like an outside view, it feels like he doesn't know what's going to work right now. I think there's just too much uncertainty with what he has in his hand. And couple that with some of his workhorses really shitting the bed. You know, Marcus Morris. I thought Pat played pretty well in game one. He had a stretch in game two where he looked good. But overall, I think Luka, you know, attacking him was rough. Rondo totally disappearing in the second half of game two. I haven't been super happy with his play. I know people were like super fired up with his play in game one, but they are not respecting his jump shot at all. And it got to him in the second half of game two to a point to where anytime he got the ball, the possession was dead. And you were talking about ball pounding. I was having a conversation with Cam and, you know, we were kind of discussing the guard rotation and who we want to see. And the thing I talked about most is Rondo pounds the ball too much. You know, especially in the playoffs, I think he's been pounding the ball too much. He hasn't been bringing that chaotic energy that he brought when he was at his best in the regular season. And that has really fucked the Clippers, I think, in these first two games, because there are times in his stints where everything grinds to a fucking halt and they haven't been able to get that juice. And that's a problem. And I got in a lot of trouble from Clippers Twitter. I got called an idiot and all those stupid things that everybody likes to call when I say something that's correct and it makes them feel like a small little man. But I talked about how the Clippers need someone like Lou Williams in this series. And people will say like, oh, Reggie can give you that, but he can't, because at least Lou was able to get into the teeth of the defense and do something productive. And that's something that they've missed. The Clippers haven't had a third guy who can get anything going offensively. And I'm not just talking about hitting shots. I'm talking about somebody who, when they have the ball in their hands, they make the defense bend to them. And that just hasn't been present outside of Kawhi and Paul George. And I thought that that was the whole reason why we got Rondo. And if he's not going to shoot the ball to make them respect his three-point shot, or he's not going to attack them when they come out at him, then he's really, really being wasted. And he's wasting his own time on the court, because anything he might bring in terms of like savvy and all this other shit, it doesn't do anything if they don't give a fuck if you're out there. So he's got to step up, because I think that that was a really big part of last night. Was his inability to be productive offensively when he got the ball down the stretch.
Yeah, I mean, just honestly, I don't 100% agree with some of the Lou Williams like revisionist like stuff. That's I hear what you're saying, because you want a player that has gravity with the ball in their hands. And I totally agree with you there. I just think that Lou does some of the other things that I wouldn't want to see in this series also. Like I just don't, I don't know. I hear you on the defensive end. For me, on the offensive end. For me, it's some of the defensive stuff that makes me worry, Brian.
I hate to cut you off. Brian, I hate to cut you off. Who else in our guard rotation is doing anything defensively?
Right. And well, that's been the problem the whole time, is we don't have, outside of Pat, and Pat has taken a step or two back defensively.
No, it's just because he's guarding someone who's so much bigger than him.
Yeah, I don't know. I've got issues with Pat's fouling throughout the whole season.
Defense with Luka. Luka is destroying every single player on the Clippers. So that's a wash as far as I'm concerned.
In the series, where do you hide Lou Williams on the defensive end?
Where are you hiding Reggie Jackson? Where are you hiding Pat Beverly? Where are you hiding Rajon Rondo? You put them in the same place, because they're not giving you anything either.
Yeah. I don't know. Anyway, to the point of Ron, I will say this about Rondo though, because there have been moments where he has tried to get out into open court and push the pace, and there's three Clippers behind him. And that's got to be kind of maddening, right? Like he is, like I have seen him at times try to pick up the pace and get everybody into a quick set, and the rest of the guys aren't at the same pace. And I think that's a bit of a problem.
That's fine. But he does both things. He does that, but then he also will take the ball in a possession and he'll wait for someone to try to post. And, you know, it's like, just move the ball, move the ball. And anyway, I think the number one thing that the Clippers need to do in Dallas is they need to punch first. It's fucking embarrassing that both games at home, they didn't land the first punch. You're at home. It's the fucking playoffs. You got embarrassed last year. Like, land a punch. Land one. And the Clippers haven't landed a single punch. All they've done is counter.
Right. Right. Yeah. It's been the Mavs series, and the Clippers have just had some runs in it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think the defensive adjustment part is really, really important. Mm-hmm. They've got to settle on something. And I know that Ty loves giving people multiple looks, and I get it. Luka's going to figure some stuff out, and you can react to that if you want. But there's got to be something solid about your defensive principles that everybody knows what they're doing. Because guys like Reggie Jackson, who's been not good defensively, I mean, game one, he was a tire fire just across the board. Game two, at least he hit some shots, but he's still not facing the right way. Game one, there were three times he wasn't facing the right direction on defense. Three. It's the fucking playoffs, bro. Learn which way your man is.
Yeah. There's definitely a lot of ball watching on defense. And I think that's where they're getting, you know, we haven't even talked about some of these like backdoor cuts that the Mavs are getting, and you know, they're falling asleep.
Well, that's coming from overhelp. They're coming out. They're late. They're blitzing Luka late, trying to get the ball out of his hands, but then they don't know, you know, what they're doing behind it. And there's just not enough. There hasn't been any cohesion defensively. And it's really sucked because, you know, for as good as I thought Zoo was in game one, I know that Luka hit those tough shots, but he looked good defensively. He was doing what he was supposed to. He stayed in front of him enough. You know, he forced him into tough looks. He was just as bad in game two. He was bad in game
Awful.
Two.
Yeah. He was really bad.
And that can't happen.
So speaking of the bigs, you actually went exactly to where I want to go to next, because we've spent a lot of time talking about the guards. I want to talk about the bigs. So I came out of game one being like, I think Zoo needs more minutes. I think he looked pretty good. I think he was contesting shots pretty well. They were just tough shots getting hit over him. And then, as you said, in game two, I was like, I want less Zoo minutes. This is awful. He is so bad in this game on both sides of the ball. Which, just a quick aside, I was talking to Justin Wilson about this today. Have we seen a Zoo Kawhi pick and roll in the first two games?
One, maybe two, just from my knowledge, but it has not been utilized. They have been spamming small pick and rolls the entire series, and there hasn't really been a good like Zoo pick and roll like set.
Yeah, I don't think Zoo even attempted a field goal until either late in the second or sometime in the third in game two. He had like no field goal attempts in the first, like at least quarter and a half. And you know, if Zoo is going to get cooked on defense, you have to put him in a pick and roll on offense and get him to be the roll man to either make some of those good passes that we know he's capable of doing out of the short roll, or get some looks, get to the rim, maybe get to the line a couple times, like put Dallas in the bonus so that, you know what I mean? Like it's the, or put your team in the bonus, but it's just like, come on, man. Like, I just feel like he, if he's going to be on the floor, you have to utilize him as a big man in your offense
for sure.
Way more than they have. So Serge Ibaka, he only played 6 minutes in game two. He was a plus six in those 6 minutes, by the way. What do you think is going on there? Do you think Ty is seeing something he doesn't like? Is he only playing 6 minutes because maybe there's more to the back than we know, and maybe he wasn't really ready to come back? Like, he did look creaky in game one. I thought he looked okay in moments. I didn't, you know, I liked it. He blocked some shots in game two in his 6 minutes. Like, what's your take on Serge? What do you see? You know, what do you want to see from him in game three?
This is something I want to look at when I rewatch, is like, how did he look specifically? I do think that the back is probably the primary culprit, but I also wonder if it's a matter of Ty looked at what happened to both of them defensively in their minutes, Zoo and Ibaka, and was like, that's a liability I can't afford for the rest of the game, basically. Like, you'll get some spot minutes, Zoo, because you're the starter or whatever. Like, maybe you can turn it around, but I can't afford to be sliced up the way that we're being sliced up with these guys. Because guys were just turning the corner on him. Zoo specifically, but I gotta go back to kind of look at sort of where Serge was physically. And apparently he was on the floor after the game, you know, getting more conditioning work in. So maybe he's just not there, which is a real big bummer. And a big issue. So, it's frustrating. And I kind of want to talk about too, sort of what you touched on, like getting Zoo involved offensively. I think that they're not putting enough pressure on Luka. My distinct memory, okay, from game one was anytime they went at him, they scored.
Mm-hmm.
And then in game two, my distinct memory from the press box was every single time Luka got switched on to one of the stars just went right past. Like, there was no resistance.
Yeah.
They just got right past him. And I said this, I think, in the preview. I said it in like the first half of game one. I want Luka to be hit as hard as he can be hit on a screen 15 to 20 to 25 times a game. Like, I don't care how you do it, but you need to put your body on that guy as many times as you can. And then
run him through the ringer.
Yeah. Another 15 to 20 times. He needs to get Kawhi, putting his shoulder into him, backing him in, trying to take him inside. Another thing that happened last night that was really, really frustrating is the Clippers got whatever they wanted inside. I'm going to pull it up for the difference, but they shot 14 to 17, less than 5 feet, according to Second Spectrum. And they were 4 of 5 from 5 to 9 feet. Okay. They were 13 of 15 in the restricted area in the first half. So that's awesome. And I tweeted this out where you see the shot charts. In the second half, they were 8 of 14, but they were 8 of 16 overall, less than 8 feet. So it's like, I feel like the emphasis died. It felt like every time down the floor, they were trying to get into the teeth of the defense. And in the second half, the emphasis wasn't there, and they weren't taking the same types of shots. And that was really frustrating to watch them kind of settle in the second half over and over and over again.
Do you think some of that is dictated by missing open looks and them trying, like almost trying too hard to get themselves out of that slump?
I think some of that for sure is, you know, kind of getting themselves out of the missing open looks thing. But I think most of it, honestly, is the fact that they were in a fucking hole again and Kawhi and PG had to drag them out of it in the first half.
Yeah.
So our two guys that were getting downhill the easiest just didn't have the energy to get downhill every single time down the floor for the 40, 41 minutes that they played.
That, I mean, I'm going to be honest, and maybe this is like too hot, but I'm just, that bothers me. It bothers me that your star players are not able to get up in those moments. Like, I get it. I know that there's a lot on them.
They did
but
get up.
That's,
they did get up.
Right. But you're
but
talking
they had
about
to
them
do it
being
the first because the role players sucked.
Right. But being too tired to do it in the second half, like, is that, I mean, how much of that do you think is conditioning? How much of that do you think is that these guys just get tired and that's who they are?
I think it happens to everybody. It happens to everybody. You think of like LeBron. LeBron takes plays off in the middle of the game. He just dumps it to some. I'll go, you handle it. I'm going to stand over here. Defense, I'm going to stand over here. Kawhi's getting run through the ringer guarding Luka. PG was on Luka for the majority of the game. Like, these two guys aren't just standing around in the times where it's not time for them to take over. And it would be nice if they had that luxury because the role players did what they're supposed to do.
Right.
And that just hasn't been the story of the first two games. Story has basically been Dallas's role players have played out of their minds and the Clippers role players have also sucked. And no matter what the Clippers stars do, the hole has always been too big because they need to expend all their energy just to get back to level.
So
it's been frustrating, man.
Yeah, it's been extremely frustrating. So the Clippers are down 0-2.
Yeah.
Now going on the road. What are you thinking about game three?
So here's my real and true opinion. I was texting with Russo about this, and he said this, and I totally agree with it. It's something that I've been feeling. The Clippers are either going to get swept, okay, which I feel is actually at this very moment the more likely option of these two things that I am about to say, or they are going to win this series and go on to win the title after having come together to pull out of this series.
Wow.
And I really don't think there's much in between. I think they're either going to like lose and lose big and that's it. And, you know, everything has to change, basically, like organization-wide has to change. Or they come back from, you know, this, what really comes down to an outlier back-to-back performance. Like, the way that I keep thinking about it is this feels particularly bad because if this happened to you twice in a series, you'd be like, okay, whatever, right? If you still win the series, let's say in a six-game series, you're like, these are the two games that they won. You're like, okay, they won those two games, but it was outliers. So like, I'm feeling pretty good about us winning this series. But the fact that the two outliers came in games one and game two, and you're at home, it feels like it's over, right?
Yeah.
Because they're supposed to be spaced out. They're not supposed to happen back to back, and they're sure shit not supposed to happen back to back on the road.
Yeah.
And so you gotta hope that the Clippers role players have two of those games in them themselves. You know, which can bring us back to even. But they now the margin for error is like negative. Like, it's not even zero. It's you have to make up for what you lost.
Do you feel so? I'm looking. It's so funny. What a strange season for Dallas. Their home and road record this season was exactly the same. They were 21-15, both on the home and at road. On the home and at road.
Is that the name of the episode?
That is the name of the episode. On the road and at home. But in some of these other categories, they were actually better on the road. In fact, you know, and again, take this with a grain of salt, their plus minus for the season was better on the road than it was at home. Now they are playing in front of 15,000
fans.
Well,
that's probably because they beat us by 50.
Yeah. I'm not even talking about just the Clippers. I'm talking about their entire season.
No, I know. I'm saying being plus 50 in one game goes a long way.
So I don't know. I mean, what are you taking on game three? You think it's more likely that Dallas wins the next two than the Clippers take one?
If I'm looking at it, it's probably like 53-47. That Dallas wins games three and four, and that's it. Now,
so let's say Clippers win these two on the road. they then take we're winning home the court back.
If the Clippers win these next two games on the road, the episode we're having today, I'm having erased from the internet, and I am back on the championship train. I'm just telling you. I'm telling everybody, you've been warned. If the Clippers win the next two games, you are going to hear me yelling from the mountaintop that the Clippers are winning that series and winning the title. That's what you're part of a champion. That's what my mantra is going to be.
Wow. Okay. Now let me give you this. Let's say they split the road and the Clippers are down 3-1.
They lose at home by like 45.
Because every game is a game 7 then.
Yeah.
So is there any series that goes to 7 that you feel confident, or is it just Dallas, or is it you do not want to see the Clippers in a 3-1?
Oh, I think deficit? Okay, look, I don't even think we'd get there against Utah. Okay. But I think there are teams where I'd feel comfortable playing a game 7. It's like Utah and Phoenix. I'd feel comfortable playing a game 7.
Really?
In terms of the teams that are ahead of us. And the Lakers, I wouldn't. I mean, how could you be confident going against LeBron in a game 7?
Yeah.
Even especially with that defense. And I would not feel confident going against these Mavs in a game 7. I would expect the Clippers to win. Like if we were to get it there, you know what I mean? We win these next two, maybe the next three. And then, you know, we drop the one in Dallas and we come home. I'd feel a little bit confident about that. But I don't want to play Luka in a game 7. I don't want to play Jokic in a game 7. I don't want to play LeBron in a game 7. So that's the way that I think about it, is those three guys are guys I'm terrified of. And it's a big reason why I was mad that they lost the last game. No shade to Dame. I'd much rather play a 6'1", 190-pound dude than a 6'8", 240-pound man.
Yeah.
Who makes anybody look like a mismatch.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. I'm with you. I think I'm leaning Dallas. I think it'll go to 5. I think the Clippers will take 1, but I think Dallas takes the series in 5. And that is a bummer to say, but you can't lose 2 home games in the playoffs and feel confident. Like
it is every game from here on out, like they need to treat like a game 7. Like,
yeah.
Yesterday was supposed to be a must win and they kind of lollygagged into it. If they come out anywhere near flat in game 3 on Friday, I'm flying to Dallas and I'm coughing on all the Clippers so that they have to forfeit. Like that's what I'm doing. Because no one needs to watch them labor through 5 games if they come out flat in Dallas. Now, if they punch them in the mouth in game 3, and, you know, squeak with a tough win in game 4, I think you get the mental edge back. But Dallas has played totally fearless in these first 2 games. And the Clippers have played terrified of Luka. And that tightness has really come back to bite them in the ass.
Agreed. I totally agree with that. If they, man, a first round exit for the Clippers, we'll save it. When and if we get there, we will break down everything we think needs to change. And I've got a lot of thoughts and a lot of hot takes about that. I don't want to do that now. You know, we still have at least one more episode before we need to get there. So we'll bench that. Is there anything else that you wanted to add about these first 2 games of the series overall before we start to roll out of here?
I'm just gonna repeat something that I tweeted. I'm gonna repackage it, but everyone should be ashamed of themselves that they wasted those Kawhi and Paul George performances in game 2. Like every single Clipper should be sending like, "Hey man, I'm really sorry about that." Like text to Kawhi and Paul George and say, "I got your back," you know, in game 3.
The Kawhi slander after game 2 is hilarious.
He did everything he could. Like, granted, he didn't score as much in the second half, but like that's to be expected because
Dallas when you drop 30 in the first half.
Like, yeah, why didn't you score 60, Kawhi? It's just like it's insane. And to say that Paul George was bad, like, yeah, Paul George missed threes, but Paul George was very good and did a lot of other stuff to kind of supplement that. He got into the paint. He hit some clutch shots again in the fourth quarter. He came up again in the fourth quarter. I'd like everybody to hear me say that. He did it again when they needed him to. It's just no one else could do anything, and they couldn't get a stop. So game two was not on the Stars. Game one, the Stars probably could have risen to the occasion a little earlier.
Agreed. Kawhi did in the first quarter, but that was kind of it.
Yeah, and Paul George did later. I just think, like, together they could have had a better – and really the last thing I want to say is the third quarter last night was a fucking disgrace.
Yeah.
I have never been more irate in the press box than I was in the third quarter. It was a disgraceful showing. They absolutely should have come out and punched him in the mouth and taken control of the series. And they just were like, yeah, whatever, Mavs, do whatever you want. Go up 15. We don't care. And it's like, how? Anyway, they've got something is rotten in the state of the Clippers. Something's going on.
Yeah. First round. I mean, I know we'll do it. A first round exit. I will jump on the change the name bandwagon. Like, fucking burn it down and start it all over again.
I'm moving to Seattle if they lose in the first round.
You stay here. I'm going to go out.
I'm out of here.
That's good. I like that. All right. We ended that with a laugh. I appreciate it. Let's close it out with our last segment. Doesn't matter if we're doing these every two games. It's my favorite segment. Track of the week.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. My only good idea in this entire show's history was track of the week. So mine is directed at the Clippers. And if you guys listen to these tracks, you will understand why. It has maybe the most vicious line I've ever heard in a song. And the fact that it's delivered in his voice is really fantastic. It's by one of my favorite bands, Circus Survive. The track is called Holding Someone's Hair Back. It's the opening track to their debut album, Juturna. And it's a fucking killer song. It's just a killer song. But the lyrics are also great. And should I let them be surprised by the line and like figure it out themselves? Or should I just have them listen out for it?
What's the line? I gotta know.
The line is, it's nothing personal. You're an embarrassment.
I think that's good. They need to hear that a little bit. They might not be too high or too low, but we definitely will remind them exactly where we are.
Yes.
All right. That's good. That's good. I like that. I like that you're directing it towards the team. I've got two tracks this week, and they come from Clipper Nation. So before game two, I put up a thing on Twitter where I was like, all right, we still got to wait for game two to happen. Let's go positive vibes. And this just came from, like, you know, I'm not going to lie. Sometimes when people reply to a tweet or something like that, I'll click on the profile and be like, who's this? And we'll see it. And a lot of times I do that and I see, you know, like somebody's got a link to their art or to like their band and stuff like that. And it's just like, I think it's so cool that there are so many creative people that we get to interact with online. And I wanted people to kind of promote their artwork and their creativity a little bit, and their pets. I threw that out there because I like seeing really cute cats and dogs, or whatever. If you got a cute parakeet, send it my way.
No such thing, bro. There's no such thing.
Parakeets?
I despise parakeets. Are kind of cute. Birds. Don't get me started on
all birds. All birds.
Birds can get the hell out of here. Okay.
Oh man.
Fucking mini winged dinosaurs. I mean, get the hell out of here, birds. Get over yourselves.
On a side, the other night I stepped out of the house to do something. We've got a couple like neighborhood garden cats that we like feed and take care of. And I walk out and usually they'll come, you know, say what's up. And I hear this like awful, like screeching kind of sound. And I was like, the fuck is that? And I look over and Rocky, our garden cat, has a bird in its mouth. And like, he's just like holding on to this. And it's the sound of this bird screaming for its life as this cat is holding on to it. And I was like, God damn it, Rocky, like, let him go. And I'm like yelling at him and I'm like trying to like lunge at him to like startle him to drop it. And like this confident piece of shit just like starts to like walk off. And I literally like picked up a rock and like threw it at the cat. Like, not, I didn't hit him, but like near him, hoping it would like startle him enough to loosen his jaw just a little bit and this bird could get free. Nothing. No, you just would not shake this cat. And then I had this thought, like, you know what? That's on the fucking bird. If you have the gift of flight and you got caught by something as dumb as Rocky the cat, that's on you. That's 100% on you. I don't know how it happens. I don't know. You could literally go up to a tree and he'd be fucked. I don't, like, you went down to the ground long enough and slow enough for, you guys don't know Rocky. Trust me. He's a fucking idiot, for this cat to catch it. Anyways, so I put this out there and I got a couple replies from people that make music. And so I just want to shout them out. Those are going to be my tracks of the week for this episode. The first one comes from Lo Ren. I'm assuming is how she wants us to pronounce it. It's two words, L-O-R-E-N. And the song is called All Your Love. It's like a really good, like, you know, kind of like pop. She's a good singer. It's got a good beat to it. Check it out. Really good. Lo Ren, All Your Love. And then the other one comes from, so this guy interacts with us every now and then. And every time he does, I laugh because it's not his Twitter handle, but like his Twitter name is Dwayne the Rock Bottom, which makes me laugh best. Every time
it's
I see
so
it.
So good. Yeah. It makes me giggle every time. We are 4.5 years old. Why are we so childish?
But his name is at Alex Melendrez. And the band is called Gentleman Sweep, which is great band name. So good. I was so happy that I was like, oh, not only is it like a dude in Clipper Nation who's making music, like your band name is like a basketball reference. That's awesome. Yeah. So you got a couple buds that were like, yeah, let's do it. And the album that he sent in is called Decorator. It's got, I listened to a couple tracks off of it. It was on Spotify and all of that, but really good summertime vibes. Check it out. Gentleman Sweep, Decorator. I was digging it. But those are my two track of the weeks. They come from Clipper Nation. There's so many awesome, talented people that interact with us, listen to the show and all of that. And just want to shout out everybody. I appreciate you all for that.
I do want to say something to you on the topic of good band names.
Yeah.
Justin Film Room was tweeting with Lucas today, and he said the phrase violent variants. And I'd really like that to be our metal band name when we start.
Okay.
Yeah.
Are we in, is there anybody else, or is it just you and me? Is this going to be like a lightning bolt kind of thing?
I think it's going to be a two piece, and it's going to be just us, and it's going to be just vocals and bass, and that's it.
Okay. I'm into that, actually. I like how experimental it is.
Yeah, let's do
it. There's a few like two man groups or two person groups that are fucking sick. Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you ever listen to Lightning Bolt?
I don't think so.
From like the mid 2000s, maybe a little early 2000s, two piece group. The drummer is the vocalist and would wear like essentially like a S&M mask with a microphone shoved in it. So the microphone is just shoved into his mouth the whole time. And he does his vocals that way. And then the other dude plays, it's basically a bass, but the bottom two strings are banjo strings.
Yeah.
And runs it through all these pedals and it sounds fucking insane, but they're so much fun. I saw them play in a warehouse in East LA when I was like 17 and they played on a half pipe and I was completely vertical holding onto somebody's shoulders with my feet like up on the coping, like watching this band play. It was sick. They're really good. Anyways, shout out to everybody for joining us this week. I know it's been a tough week. I know the last two games have not been what everybody wanted to see. And I'm sure this episode didn't make you feel much better about it, but we are happy that you joined us. Wherever you are, be sure to subscribe to the show so you can stay up to date. If you're on Apple Podcasts, leave us a quick rating and review. It really helps us out. I think we finally broke into the top four Clippers podcasts on rankings.
Wow.
Yeah, there's a few of them out there. I think we got into the top three at one point. We might have been edged out again, but hit us with a rating review. It helps us out there. It helps new people find the show. And, you know, I say this every week. We don't want advertisers in our show. It's very intentional by design. We've been offered them and we've turned them down. And we want to be completely listener supported. Just got done talking about all the amazing people in Clipper Nation. And we want to be brought to you by Clipper Nation because of how much we love it. And so if that speaks to you, if you're able to, please go to patreon.com/clipsetpod and become a paid patron. It's $2 a month. You know, it's a quarter every episode. It's even less than that now in the playoffs. And it helps us sustain the show. There are costs that go into creating this. And it helps us out. And, you know, hopefully one day we get to do more and more as this thing grows. But ultimately, you know, it's all for you guys. And we really appreciate you. And as always, remember to wash, rinse, sanitize, and repeat.
And if you don't, Donald Sterling wins.
And that's a fact.